Okay, let's begin. I am Lanice Antoine Shelley, and I'll be your host through constructive, healing-based conversations designed to illuminate the adoptee, parents, and the adoption curious. We center the topics around community, mentorship, leadership, and healing, so you get a multidimensional view that is ultimately empowering. These are the voices who could not speak when they were young. Okay, before we get into it, I wanted to share with you some new offerings. We've just partnered with Isaac Etter's company called Identity, who provides adoption consulting and short practical guide pamphlets, a practical guide to transracial adoption, and a practical guide to Black hair care. As a listener, you get 15% off. Just click the link in the show notes where you can find all references and hot topics that are talked about in each episode. And since you're listening, I just wanted to thank those of you who've rated and reviewed this podcast, because every 5-star click helps remind these platforms that our work matters and helps me keep going. So those of you who are getting so much out of these conversations and have taken the 30 seconds to write a positive takeaway, I see you and I thank you. Those who haven't yet, now is the time, my love. Let's talk about it on Instagram after you go ahead and click 5 stars and write a review. Hey there, how are you? How are you at making friends? I'm someone who makes friends easily. When I'm in an open-hearted space, I can charm the most committed curmudgeon. However, I don't consider myself popular at all. I only have a few friends who I can call upon at a whim. They say that popular people are popular not because more people like them, but because they like more people. Though I can tolerate most, I'm not one to like many people, and I trust even less. I say all of this to frame the fact that I can honestly say, and dare I say, adore my adoptee friends. Perhaps it's because we have a major life topic in common, so we're able to see, understand, and empathize with one another on a visceral level. I don't know. Every time I meet you, I find myself expanded. This is definitely the case for our guest today. Isaac Etter mentioned Anne Efron's name, and I swiftly went down the rabbit hole investigating this preternaturally talented human being. Anne is the author of quite a few well-known books that include You Don't Look Adopted, Making a Mess, Writing and Pooping. I love that title. Truth Agency, Writing Ideas for People Who Were Adopted, and she also wrote the film Phantom Halo. Right now, Anne facilitates writing workshops and self-development cohorts starting in May, so please go to her website to get on the list, because slots are limited. These cohorts focus on financial equity and enoughness, and what it would mean to rise into your enoughness while in fellowship with other creatives. And she also has a writing retreat in Cape Cod. I reached out to Anne, and 2 days later, we were on this call. This conversation exemplifies the ease of two people with a heart for impact, commitment for connection, and a spirit of playfulness. We discuss approaching life and trauma from an angle, adoptees' relationship with enoughness and financial security. We talk about how yoga and other healing modalities have shaped both of our lives, and what it means to be extraordinary versus ordinary. When I listened back to this conversation, it was hard to tell that we had just met. I felt as if I'd known this person forever. There was so much ease, openness, and generosity. Perhaps it was because we're adopted, or because we're both women, or because we're both mystic creatives, or we could simply be kindred spirits. I think it's all of the above. Let's take a listen. I just want to start this conversation with, how is your heart? How are you today?
Something happened today. I was listening to an adoptee read some of her work on the phone, and she talked about being in relationship, and a therapist going to the therapist with her partner, and the therapist drawing an iceberg and showing, you know, just the tip of the iceberg. And something happened, and she read her work, and what I realized, and I have to connect you to, because you will love her. But what I realized was, in her writing, she was dismissing what was underneath the tip, because she didn't feel that it was something that she could talk about, that either she didn't merit talking about it, or that she was wrong. And so I was encouraging her to write about what was underneath that. And she said she'd never even said those things. And I said, okay, well, go write them, like make a list, and then just call me after and just read them to me. And something happened to my heart. I mean, I've been a wreck all morning, because I felt like I was going a little bit crazy. And I think this is, for an adoptee in particular, change is really disruptive and frightening. And I could feel that a new thought had come to me. And in the past, I would have killed the thought. I would have found a way, like, go eat something, go drink something, go do something, but don't stay with this thought, because it feels like I'm going down the drain, like I'm going down some drain. So I've learned, get into bed and feel, just feel and feel. It's okay if I just go with. And just,
yeah, I so love this.
I had the sense of, I've been trying to understand this feeling of I am flow. Like, I'm so rigid. And I watched your yoga practice, and that's one of the reasons I've been crying, because it's just like, oh God, there it is. It's the, like, even how you go from pose to pose, it's like, oh God, she has the flow. She is not afraid to let her body
expand
and feel, right? And take up space. And so I had this image of, oh God, my heart, there is a plug in my heart, and I am afraid, but I think I need to pull out the plug. And I was becoming a baby, and I was like, I think I want my mom to pull out the plug. And I was like, your mom can't pull out the plug. Like, you got to pull out the plug. And so I imagined I was in this, like I was a baby in a warm bath, and that I did it, even though it was so terrifying. I pulled out the plug, and I just felt water come rushing in through my heart, rushing. And it was all the grief, but it was going through me, and it wanted to move through me. And it just needed to know that I wasn't afraid of it, that I could do it. And so then I let that happen. And then I was feeling that, and then I felt like a baby. And I was thinking about what you said about, you talked about, I've listened to, you know, a lot of you recently, so I don't know the different episodes, but you were saying you're talking about language and pre-verbal trauma. And I was thinking, oh my God. So when I was a baby, and I don't have language, so I'm just looking around, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm looking around. And then my mother walks in the room, right? And I don't have language, but it's just like, okay, my heart feels sick. My legs feel tense. I don't feel good. And this is my mother, like, this body is coming towards me. I love her, because she's, you know, what I have to love. But this feeling of sickness, like, okay, this is life. Like, this feeling of sickness, this is life. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking, so she would start talking to me, but she would talk to me in English. But I heard English in the womb. So at least that's a lifeline, right? It's like, not the right voice, but like something's familiar. And I was thinking, oh my God, like what if she was speaking Spanish, you know, or what if I grew up speaking Spanish, mm-hmm. you know, and so that even that's not a lifeline, mm-hmm. you know, so then you have pre-verbal trauma, but then you have like verbal trauma on top of that. And then I was thinking about you and I was thinking, holy shit, like how deep does the well go? Like how much work does it take to come out of this well when the familiar is so far away? And then I just thought, oh, okay, this is where nature comes in, like, or God, like some belief in some higher spirit, because my heart has to pull to something that it can resonate with, right? Because I learned to lower my resonance with this being that is not my resonance. So I've learned to turn down the heat, but that's not good for me. So if I could go back in time, you know, and be an infant again, I would turn towards the outdoors, or which I did, right? Mm-hmm. But I did too. Right?
I spent a lot of time outdoors. Like I spent most of my days alone, even though I had a sibling. We were never close growing up. And so I became a paganistic nature witch, like from an early age. I would spend hours in parks and creeks catching critters and singing to myself, making up languages, making up stories and scenarios with the trees. We had willow trees in our neighborhood, and I would just be there. I'm sure the neighbors looking over their fences at this little forlorn black girl, like, what is she doing? Just for hours. And then I would go home for dinner, you know, and that would be my day. But even now in the summer times, because I live in Chicago, and in the winter, I go out in the winter, I'm on my bike year round. I like to do something called earthing. Are you familiar with earthing? Mm-hmm. And there's this urban garden across the street from my place. And I go there with my crystals and I lay them on my meridian points. And I just like soak in the sun and the rabbits, little bunnies hopping around me, the butterflies, you know, hopping from plant to plant. It's so serene. It's so replenishing and healing to be in that space. And it's important that I have that earth to apply to my healing practice. That's why I'm not in New York, because New York mm-hmm. doesn't have earth. mm-hmm. And so here in Chicago, you have enough of natural exposure to the elements, to the lake, mm-hmm. which is a few blocks from me. I spend time on the beach, on the lakeshore path, and then I go to an urban garden, and then I'm on my bike. Like all of these things feed into making me more grounded, more centered, and feeling whole. Because you're right, this idea of where does the well end? Mm-hmm. And I don't know when you started your out of the fog kind of internal work or seeking, but I started it about 3 years ago. So I think a lot of adoptees feel late in the game. And I often say that we adult adoptees are at a deficit because we're just playing catch up. We're finding out all of these things that we never knew about our biological family, about our own health. And we're just trying to stay afloat of this information overload. Mm-hmm. In Kevin's episode, you talked about the vagus nerve mm-hmm. and meditation. And I can see that you are very much an empathic and visual person when it comes to meditation. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I love the image of you outside as a little kid, and it doesn't sound lonely because mm-hmm. If you're grounded, then you're not lonely. So then it's.
Hey, I want to share with you something that has changed my life. It's more like someone, my therapist. Why is she so important? Well, because I want to win in this life. I want to break through the carousel of stories I've compiled that hold me back, that keep me from expanding into my full potentiality. Stories of unworthiness, not enoughness, and even stories of questioning why I am here. I also want to stop dumping my unsorted feelings on the people around me and reacting with the same behavioral patterns that keep me stuck. Conversations with my therapist have made me more confident, clearer in my intention, and more centered in my spirit. That is why I am elated that we are sponsored by BetterHelp, where you can, from wherever you happen to be right now, match with a therapist tailored to your exact needs. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 30,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. Someone who you can text at any time and schedule online for either a chat, Zoom, or phone call. And if it turns out that your therapist isn't the right fit, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional cost. Visit the link in the show notes, betterhelp.com, when they were young, to get 10% off the first month. You need to click the link in the show notes in order to get the 10% discount. I want to see you win, beloved. Let's do it together. Visit the link, betterhelp.com, when they were young.
Now I'm grounded. And loneliness is something that I struggle with. Like mm-hmm. even now, like I, aloneness, I call it. I really find the idea of having taken my ancestors with me from Haiti a challenge. For a long time, I felt abandoned by the greater forces and by the ancestors. And left to kind of wander this earth by myself. Mm-hmm. And there's no amount of resources or quote unquote love that can fill that emptiness when you have that within you.
There's this podcast I started listening to, Huberman Labs, and there's an episode, I needed to be more focused listening to it. So I stopped because he's at Stanford and he's a researcher and he talks, it gets in the particulars really quickly, but he was talking to this one researcher who I think what the implication was is that they're researching to see if in our DNA, we actually inherit more of our ancestors than people assumed, you know, like their experiences, like what they did, what they spent their time doing. And I, when you talk about your ancestors in Haiti and here you are now, I mean, it's really easy for my brain to make stories that look like a knife, you know, that you were cut from that. But I'm really interested. These days and how my brain constructs negative stories about my separation that I don't know are true. I don't actually know are true. Mm-hmm. And I am very interested in finding ways to empower my system because I think that enduring pre-verbal trauma means that you're only in your body, right? Like, your body is experiencing everything. And then post that, I just lived in my brain. And then I let my brain tell me stories so I couldn't hear my body so well. And now I'm trying to, with meditation and with mindfulness, like tell my brain, okay, you know, thanks. And the body's the body's the whole thing, you know, like let's listen to the body for a while. And nobody, my parents, nobody can take my body's connection from its history away from me. I am my history. And I had this vision of, you know, when I said the mother walks in the room, that let's say I was this kind of magical photograph, you know, and so I'm lying there as a baby, like this magical photograph that makes up me. And then she comes in the room, but she sees me as a different magical photograph. And because I can only see myself through her eyes, I actually change. I become her image, her photograph's image of me. But my body knows that's not true. And I can feel these last few years, it's like my cells are fighting this image that got imposed on me. And I think one reason that watching you on Instagram made me fall apart is that I in your movements, I see your body like expressing itself, and I it looks like truth to me, you know. And I think that we can have wanting, which makes us feel like we don't have enough or we're not there. But I also think that's the human condition, to live with want. And just because you want to have more proof, I mean, I'm speaking for you, but not you, but you know, mm-hmm. that it's, what if it's already there? You know, like, what if we are a full expression of our history, but our head is fucking with us? Mm. Is what I'm thinking.
That's interesting.
Does that make sense to you?
Oh, it makes absolute sense, because in yoga, I'm actually yoga certified. I just became yoga certified.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks. And it's not something that I want to or need to pursue, but I got a full ride scholarship for the training. And so years ago, I had kind of pinned this manifestation, oh, I'll only learn or get trained to be a teacher if it's a full ride. And then years later, I manifested it. And so I just had to answer. Whenever you see like such a large manifestation, you're like, okay, I got to do it. Regardless as to whether I'm going to follow through or not. But I do want to provide yoga for adoptees. Mm. I'm figuring out what that looks like and how to give that to the adoptee community and just make it accessible. Mm. But in yoga, one of the things that I think about when the teacher talks about what is your intention for the class? My intention oftentimes is to, one, be present with what it is that I'm feeling, because I might be stressed or I might be sore or stiff or et cetera. Or I just might just need a class where I can purge everything, you know, and just let everything just come out of my pores, come out of my joints and the fascia and the sinew and bone, and just ooze out of me and feel and witness it leave my body. But I think that the strongest intention that I could have for my practice and for my life, which is something that I have to be ever cognizant of, is to move forward as if I've already achieved it, as if mm-hmm. I've already won. And so I like what you're saying, because that's exactly the frame of mind that I'm trying to encapsulate in my daily life. But sometimes it's a struggle, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but imagine going through anything with the mindset of, oh, it's already achieved. Mm-hmm. It's already mine. I've already become enough for this thing. Mm-hmm. I think that many lives, including my own, would shift exponentially.
I think so too. I think, I'm here in Westwood, Massachusetts, because I'm helping the recently retired Harvard basketball coach write her book on leadership. And one of her biggest lessons is to act as if, you know, that it's not fake it till you make it, because that's pretending. Act as if is be what, you want to become. And the other part of that for me that I've learned from her is toughness, because as an adoptee, I have wallowed in collapse, you know, like just, it's too much for me. I can't do this. I'm going to cry today. And what if that's not an option? You know, I mean, I can show up and cry, but I think I am harder in myself in a very good way. And I think maybe it's the world wanted me to be harder when I wasn't ready. So that's different. I'm calling on myself. I'm telling myself, and maybe harder is the wrong word, but I want to use the word stronger and more dependable for myself, so I can depend on myself. And I realized you had asked about the vagus nerve, and I hadn't answered the question because I got stuck in the concept of body. But I think of everything you've just told me, and this idea of when you're a child and you're out wandering, and the vagus nerve is the wandering nerve, right? And it goes from the back of our brain all the way through our body, like so many tendrils of it. And the tendrils are reporting back to the brain if we're okay or not. And so if you're there doing your practice and you are breathing okayness and you are breathing the belief that you are the person you want to be, how is that not going to affect your brain, right? Because your liver is going to be more relaxed and your heart's going to be more relaxed because you're taking care of them. You're not having these thoughts that are causing a cascade of stress hormones to come down. So I feel like we can do this sort of reverse, you know, when we're born, one of the nicest things is when the baby grabs its mother's finger, and it's nice for the baby and it's nice for the mother. And I think something happens in that, right? There's like an action that happens. And so I've started just doing that to myself, because I'm trying to close the loop, right? Like, okay, this is a connection. Feel the connection, and go into sensation, and maybe the brain will catch up. I feel like I'm answering your questions like a little bit at an angle, and I'm sorry. Like so much has happened in a brief amount of time. So I'm doing the best that I can. But
it's great. Okay. It's great. You know, I appreciate how you answer the questions, and they keep me thinking. I actually approach things at an angle too. Mm. So you're speaking my language. Mm.
I mean, for you to teach yoga, I had done yoga for 17 years, I think. And then when I wrote You Don't Look Adopted, I actually couldn't get on the mat. It was almost like, if I pulled on my joints, I would lose it. Just like, it was too much for my system. And it's only now, and it's been almost 7 or 8 years, that I'm starting to really use my body. I used my body for the last 7 years for manual labor. Like, I lived on a farm and I walked a lot, but that deliberate strengthening and opening is different. And I think that if I had had even YouTube classes, a body that was like my body doing this and recognizing that this may make you feel vulnerable would have been helpful, because my brain was focused on just do the yoga, not processing that the small actions in themselves are the, like, that's a miracle, right? That it's a miracle if I put my shoulders back, and having that itself become part of the process and recognized as part of the process. I'm so happy that you're a certified yoga teacher, because, man, we need that.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely felt that there was a lack of of mindfulness and wellness approach to the adoption crisis. And I think that it's essential for us as adoptees to understand all of the modalities available to us to heal. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are just aware of therapy, talk therapy, and those traditional practices. But I think that there are a plethora of other ways in which we can, at an angle, approach our healing. I'm just going to read it because it just reminds me of how we should approach our healing. It's messy stuff, and just embracing the imperfection of it will help us get a little bit closer to where it is that we want to go. Mm-hmm. You said, and please remind me what book, which book it comes from, because I don't think Kevin said, when the egg is dropped or breaks or a glass of milk is dropped and spills, no one looks at the egg and milk and wonder why they are all over the place, a mess, disorganized. So how come adopted people keep thinking they have to apologize for their scattered minds? And that was huge. And you talk about the heart opening, the expansion of the chest. These are things that I have had to learn later in life. I did not want to be seen. I spent a lot of my childhood hiding, trying not to be extraordinary, because extraordinary got you bullied. Extraordinary got people jealous of you, people envious of what it is that you have, and they don't like you. And so I wanted to be ordinary and to be unseen and forgotten about, because that was the safest place. And it wasn't until later in life, after years of dancing, that I was able to embrace the fact that, like, people may look at me for whatever reason, you know, and that's okay. And I am allowed to express myself in ways in which I want to express myself. I can wear head wraps, you know, to auditions. And when I started to really embrace my Afrocentric and Haitian-centric sensibilities, that's when my career started to shift in a really positive way. My confidence, my self-esteem was just buoyed by this sense of, I can expand, I can take space. And it is an issue in the adoption community, a crisis within ourselves, that we can't take space, that we have to continuously earn the space that we're given. And that's a fallacy, and I'm here to dismantle it.
It's so beautiful. And I think that what you said about being extraordinary and being normal, I think it's complicated because, I mean, you're so obviously extraordinary. A person who's not as, like, classically beautiful as you, it would be hard, because it's like, well, great, I show up as myself, but I'm still not going to have the same glow or power as Lanise. So, like, I'm just going to stay a slug because I'm a slug. And so what I want to figure out is, like, how do we do both? How do we make it okay to actually, like, be classically extraordinary and the spilled egg, and how do we see the egg as beautiful as, you know, the person on top of the wedding cake? And I think that I've realized that I just want to be, okay, I want to be both. I want to be ordinary and extraordinary, but mostly I think I want to be ordinary. You know, like, my refusal to brush my, like, I just don't show up made up, right? Like, and I can say, oh, that was a mistake. Like, normally I would have made myself up, but that's not true. because I think I'm constantly testing the world. Like, how do you like me now? But I'm not doing it with great confidence. Like, I'm doing it with 50% confidence instead of saying, how do you like me now, with that, like Ramona the Brave confidence, like, or Pippi Longstocking confidence, you know, like feeling like 100% in me, even when maybe my outside doesn't agree with what society wants me to look at as a female in a female body. And so what I want to figure out in myself, so then I can talk about how I did it with other adoptees, is like, how do I, when you're adopted, it's, you want to do two things often, like be your extraordinary self, but then not overshine your parents. And so both being ordinary and extraordinary are complicated and come with dangers. And I'm in this home, I'm in my hometown, you know, for the first time since I was 18. And I think I'm here to learn how to walk down the street as myself, you know, like I'm still wearing the same, I'm probably wearing the same clothes I was wearing then. And the challenge is, can I walk down the street in this body and not have a committee in my head organizing my thoughts before I even have them? Like, can I see this world through this body and these eyes, purely just me, without trying to figure out what everyone wants me, judging myself ahead of time? Or, I mean, what I would love, see, this is that feeling of being all over the place, but I have to keep going with it because I'm trying to say something to you that is like the spilled glass of milk. It's not a linear thing. It's a feeling that doesn't have language. So I have to use language to try to create a feeling. But I would love to be in your class following you, but not comparing myself to you, but connecting to your energy, right? Mm-hmm. Where I know your heart's energy loves my heart's energy. So we're there to support each other instead of, what do I lose if she's better than me? And what does she gain if she's better than me? And am I okay here? I mean, how fun if we were doing an adoptee retreat and it was all like we're dancing on the beach, essentially, you know, not judging the dance, but feeling it from the inside, like little kids.
Yeah, I love that. And the sense of playfulness.
Playfulness.
Yeah, that you talked about. I think playfulness is so important. What were you about to say?
Well, I was going to say, I think that goes, but I feel like for so many of us, adulthood now is about being a child again, but this time with language and the ability to try to connect to other people so that I can be a little kid, but instead of, also as someone who's mostly alone, that I would stretch myself to reach out to you and say, hey, you want to go catch frogs?
I would love that.
Well, they're in my backyard. You can come over and
I grew up catching pollywogs and tadpoles and things like that. So people wouldn't think that of me because I'm such like a cosmopolitan girl now here in the city, but I'm about the nature tree hugging. So do you have a ranch, a farm?
No. So I don't have anything. I keep going from place to place, and I had gone to California just to visit my friend, and she has this huge VRBO, and she asked if I wanted to stay and be poet or writer in residence, farmer in training. And then COVID happened. So then I was there for 2 years. And then this Harvard coach asked me to write her book. And so I came here. I was only going to be here for 3 months. And so I just keep not. So I'm staying in the house of my mom's friend on the edge of this woods where I used to spend my childhood. And I just, you know, before that, Kitty Stockett, who wrote The Help, she, that's where I wrote my book, in her New York apartment. And
oh, wow.
I know. And just recently, I've just decided, like, and this is the river. You are the river. Stop mm-hmm. trying to plant yourself in a house. That's not how it's mm-hmm. going to work. But I just keep landing in these really beautiful places that are near the outside. Because like you, I think that's, I need to plug in. Your birth mom's in Boston.
Yes. My birth mom has lived in Boston for the past, I think, 10 years or so.
And so when you got your MFA, was she there?
No.
Oh.
She wasn't there. She came shortly after me. I stayed with some cousins, some biological cousins there, and tried to reunify with my cousins. And that kind of went south. Because mm-hmm. there's so many cultural barriers that I wasn't prepared for. And the same thing happened to my sister, who's my adopted sister is not biological, but she tried to reunify as well. And it quickly went south. It's very complicated, you know, because we grew up in the suburbs of Northern California with a single female parent.
And what suburb?
In Chico.
Oh.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Chico?
I raised my daughter in Los Gatos, which is in San Jose.
Okay. So,
yeah.
yeah, Chico is just tiny. And so being around men, like to this day, being around strange men, it takes me a moment to acclimate my nervous system so that I feel safe. But mm-hmm. in the Haitian communities, like, people live in close proximity to one another. Like, I shared a bed with my cousin, and in the other room, my other cousin shared a bed with their grandmother, who had just come off the boat from Haiti. Mm-hmm. And then you plop yourself in an already very volatile situation, because we're strangers, but we're kin, and we're trying to make this work, and we're all excited, and we're all, you know, endorphins racing through our veins, adrenaline racing at the prospect of finding a prodigal cousin, and then dealing with the reality of that, which was, I've been assimilated to American culture. Mm-hmm. And Haitian culture is extremely foreign to me. I no longer know Creole. I came to the States speaking Creole and not knowing English. And then I quickly learned English and lost Creole. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I didn't want to speak Creole, because no child, no immigrant child wants to be different when they're little, mm-hmm. you know, and we had accents growing up. And even now people say, oh, I can hear the musicality, a tinge of something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's a journey that I'm still on and will ever be on. Mm-hmm. When it comes to my biologicals. And I do want to visit my mother in Boston, mm-hmm. because apparently she has health issues. And I just applied for life insurance. And mm-hmm. and as you know, like, there's so many things we don't know mm-hmm. about our medical histories. And it's fascinating that that's not an option when applying mm-hmm. for life insurance, that they don't say, are you adopted? You know, they just ask you these questions about mm-hmm. your parental history. And it's just like, I can bypass all of this.
if you want me to bring your mom something, just let me know.
Oh, wait, are you in Boston right now?
I'm 20 minutes away.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe okay, she can I'll hear us. Better mind.
I don't even know if she is aware that I have a podcast. Mm-hmm. But thank you for that. I'll keep that in mind. Definitely. Yeah,
it's a real offer.
Well, thank you. We spent all this time and I want to make sure we talk about your books. You Don't Look Adopted and Truth and Agency. Let's first talk about You Don't Look Adopted. It's interesting that you, I'm guessing that has been your experience. Like people have said that to you. You don't look adopted.
No, no one ever said that to me.
Okay.
But someone, I was talking to someone and a nurse said that to her. And so actually, I don't know if anyone, I don't remember someone saying that to me, but as soon as she said that to me, that was it.
Yeah.
The biggest out of those two books, the second one, the Truth and Agency book, I wrote, I was here, I was supposed to be working on the Harvard book, but things were going slowly. And I just thought, you know, if I get hit by a bus, all the stuff I've learned about working with adoptees, I should just get it down. Like writing ideas, I should just get it down. So that was more like, just get that done. So if I'm hit by a bus, I don't die feeling bad about dying with the stuff inside of me. And You Don't Look Adopted, now that it's been 7 years, I've just had this feeling that I should be writing a sequel, because like that book was me waking up to the fact that coming out of the fog. Mm-hmm. But the price of doing that publicly, if I go out and someone says to me, I read your book, I don't feel a celebration inside. I feel sick, because I feel like, oh my gosh, you know the deepest things about me and I don't know anything about you.
Yeah.
And I am a writing coach, and I am having second thoughts about adoptees telling their stories. Like, and because I was thinking, do I want a sequel just because I feel like I am supposed to hand over my experiences to somehow justify my life? Like, I can't just have these experiences and keep them to myself. I have to somehow make them into something. And there's this astrologer, she's an adoptee, her name's Sarah Hafner. She's under the Poet Witch, and she's so gifted. I can't recommend her highly enough for people to have a reading. I did have a reading with her the other day, and she said, basically, it's in the stars. Like, this is your life. You have experiences and you publicly share them. So I understand that impulse may just be my purpose for being here. But also, I am aware that I am allowed to have experiences and not have to explain them to people. And I'm going to hold that for a while, that I don't have to explain to you why I feel the way I do or why I behave the way I behave. You can figure it out if you're that interested. You can ask me questions, but I don't have to preemptively try to explain myself to you. And I am finding great happiness these days in that I can live my life. It's my life and I don't have to give it to you.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's huge for adoptees.
Yeah.
Because we come into this thinking that we are fulfilling someone else's dream, their desires, and our desires are secondary to that.
Mm-hmm. And our life is secondary, right? Like, let me hand over my life so your life can be better. And I think there's good things in that. And I definitely think people should write their story. Like, they don't necessarily have to publish it, but it's really powerful to have languaged, to have pulled out some sort of narrative thread that you feel like, this is what happened. And I just want to get this straight so that my brain can stop thinking about the past.
Mm.
But what you're doing, I think, to validate adoptees and to give them a platform, isn't that enough in some ways? Like, it's like if you're a little kid and you walked in to your mom and you showed her something you did, isn't it enough for her to say, that is amazing? you are amazing. And then you walk out of the room.
Well, I definitely feel a deeper sense of connectivity and healing by this act of service for the community. I know that a lot of people have found it to be quite cathartic to put their stories down and then push it out there into the abyss. Mm-hmm. Is your reticence for writing your own story, is it because of the feeling of vulnerability, oversharing, overexposing yourself?
You know what? I just realized it as you were talking. That's such a great question. I want to do it. It feels like my body is supposed to do it, but I have to give up looking at reviews and doing it to please people. Like I have, because part of me is still afraid that if I really put the real story on the paper, I will be hated. And that's what I find working as a coach for people, like, is getting them to pull that thing out to show them. That's actually probably the most beautiful thing. You just can't see it because it's a mirror of what you're most afraid of showing people, but it's the most beautiful part. So I keep wanting to find like silence. Going to New York for 3 months and being in that apartment where I didn't know people, you know, and like, I just want silence so that I can not hear anything except for my own voice and let it come out. It's taking me I keep shifting my body. Like where is, you know, like the energy's trying to run through me. I have to settle in somehow.
That's an important point, though, the feeling of validation, needing that validation from reviews, from people looking in on your story, because that's another kind of symptom of being adopted, right? Mm-hmm. Is needing that validation, needing people to say that, oh, I see you. I acknowledge that you existed mm-hmm. and you deserve to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me to... like after a day, if I say exact, like during this podcast, I'm saying exactly what I'm not, you know, I'm just showing up as myself. And I think that like giving myself a solid high five when we're finished and then not thinking about it anymore. It's not a big deal. It's not a small deal. It's in the documentary Stutz, the therapist Stutz tells, if I was good at names, Jonah Hill, that life is a series of pearls, you know, and every single thing you do is a pearl, but there's a turd in the middle of each pearl. and I think that's so great, right? Because like as adoptees in particular, we just want to make pearls, yeah. Right? Like, and so if I do this podcast with you and then if I go and ruminate about it, you know, like, and if I focus on the little turd, I ruin it. You know what I mean? Like it's perfect because it happened and we both showed up trying our best. And so that makes it perfect. So then we go on to the next pearl, but it's a relief knowing it's okay that there's a little turd.
I'm going to quote you on that. Well, it's the perfectionistic person inside of us, right? I know that I'm very, very much a perfectionist, and I struggle with needing accolades, needing acknowledgement. And I have been working on ways in which I can give that to myself. Mm-hmm. I can reward and celebrate myself, because for years I didn't celebrate any of my triumphs, not truly, but it's essential that we, whether they be small or big, depending on what your barometer is, to set aside time to just like be giddy you know, about what it is that you accomplish and say to your inner child, to your inner self, like, I am so proud of you. I can't believe we did it. We did it.
And it's the we, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you watch a documentary on, say, Lady Gaga, and there's her basic loneliness, you know, that, and that doesn't matter how great the show is, but what you just did, the we, I think that recognizing that we are with spirit and that it is like, that's there, we are fundamentally a we, and that that's for you to celebrate that. And then, and it's not selfish because spirit is in everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. So then you're connected to everybody. Everybody did what you just did, if you do it. But, you know, I think also a big part of it is learning as an adoptee to bear the uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think that you celebrating yourself, there probably is some fundamental discomfort there because there's an ache, right? It's like, yeah, but I would like 100 people hugging me, right? And instead my body has to have this experience of, okay, well, I just had this great experience and I'm standing here alone. But just because it's uncomfortable doesn't mean it's bad. And I'm just learning that in this body, I have confused discomfort with bad. And that the more I'm willing to be uncomfortable, the stronger and more alive I am. I thought I was supposed to be comfortable. Hmm. Does that make sense to you?
It makes complete sense. And it's, there's a few people in my life that I can think of that really flee from discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of being an adoptee is embracing that it's not going to be comfortable.
And a yogi, right? Because you have to be on the edge. You're always on the edge.
Mm-hmm. And it's leaning into those moments of unease, discomfort, where you break through to more expansion, break through to more space and more knowledge, self-knowledge that can aid you in the moments, years, events to come. And that's the key, because it's myopic in thinking that you can't survive this minute second of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
When you can, you can. There was this teacher that I had in Canada who said, you have enough for this moment. Now this moment, you have enough for this moment. And that really resonated with me because not only as a dancer and ex-athlete and all of that, because I love the idea of like, what will motivate me to the next thing? But also when it comes to mental health, like a lot of us struggle with mental health and balancing that out and thinking that we don't have enough, that we have been depleted. We are completely alone, and this aloneness is all encompassing and drowning us. When you just drop into the breath and allow yourself to settle into the truth, which is you have enough for this moment. Just take it one moment at a time. I want to unpack the creative lives.
Could I say one thing? Because what you said, I'm actually starting a class on Wednesdays in May and it's called Enough.
I'm considering doing it.
I think that what you said, I feel like if we can get a group of adoptees together to actually pin down, because I think that that is what is ruining our lives. Like we are chasing after this not enough idea. And like, let's make ourselves accountable and actually like list, okay, what's enough? Right. And so to have a support group to help each other get enough, but also, you know, to really pin down the bullshit of like, what is missing from this moment? Truly. Like, can you name it?
Well, I looked at that class, at your courses, and I want you to list some of your courses because you offer so many great, great things with your retreat and your writing classes and your Not Enough or Becoming Enough course. I'm considering joining that, and it I love that it's weekly, right? Mm-hmm. It's,
you know, that's what Sunday. I found. I mean, it mm-hmm. started a few years ago when Pam Cordano and I did Flourish, but what I have found is for an adoptee to show up every week for a year, and you know, life happens and you met, but that changes people. Just that. It's, they're already a different person because they showed, and then the community, because a year gives you the opportunity to go through some fluctuations, you know, but I mean, these groups, they stick together. There's mm-hmm. a group of them are all coming to Boston in May to see each other again. It's like that. I just think it's the consistency. So I could be talking about rabbits for a year and it I mean, I guess that would matter, but it's the coming together and talking about hard things that we just do better when we're together. I think
we do. Healing together is definitely more efficacious than on your own. There was
You get to see how great everyone else is, right? And you're like, wow, yeah. Okay, if they're so great, then I must also be great because I can't be the only not great person in this.
Yeah. How many slots do you have left?
Oh, there's lots. People don't usually sign up to the last minute. So there's the 20, it's limited to 20 because that's how many, it's a comfortable number, but okay. There'll be a rush at the very last minute. I would love to have you in it.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely considering it. I have
no
to
pressure.
Look over some things, but I want to push this on my Instagram.
Oh, thank you. That would be so great. And I'm doing a class with Joyce Pavo on Sundays, and I asked her to write to do what I think is the hardest topic, which is value and money. Because I know so many adoptees who say they can't do things because they don't have the money. And their sense of self-value is really low. And I was thinking, what if we directly challenge that for a year? Like, what if as a group, what will happen if for a year we really look at how do you value yourself and how does that affect your relationship with money? Like, can we just kick this motherfucker? Like, sorry, but it makes me mad because I think that just because we weren't able to be afforded in like either financially or emotionally, that I feel like that went into so many of our psyches. And then we carry out that, like, I can't afford that, but that's not true. And it makes me so mad that the adoptee community is weaker than it has to be, including myself. I mean, I just teach groups that I need.
I love that. I've done that in the past too, like with dance classes and things like that. Like if I'm teaching a movement course, these are all movement sequences that I personally need. So
yeah, because then it's vital. Otherwise, we're kind of half dead teaching it because you're like, yeah, I've been there, done that. But this is for real.
I want to just unpack your retreat and all of your services. Like,
oh, thank you.
Yeah.
The retreat. So I have one coming up on the Cape and there's two spaces left. And I did one a few, maybe 2 months ago. And, you know, I used to do 10 people with Pam, but I like 5 because of COVID for one thing, but just it's super intimate. And there's something that happens. What I learned writing, you know, like adopted, I dedicated so much resource, so many resources. I mean, I went so deep in debt. It's not even funny, but I'm not suggesting people go into debt, but I think there is something about dedicating resources towards your own intentions. And what I love about the retreat is the people that come there have decided that they want to write, and they don't have to be writers. It's just, they're using writing as a tool to figure out who they are. And once they show up, it's sort of out of their hands. So then they can take their hands off the steering wheel. And my intention for them is, let's find your gold, you know, and then they're with other people like them who are doing it and change. It's so easy to live your life without changing. I mean, you really do, like, to change. It's almost like you have to get hit by a truck. And so sometimes you have to put yourself in the path of the truck, because otherwise you're just going to continue to live the way you are living, because it's worked so far. But I look at the retreat as like, okay, I want to do something significant. I want to exist. I want to be here. So I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And my favorite, I mean, isn't this how you are as a yoga teacher? I mean, to see a body transform itself, to will itself, to show up to spirit so that spirit can work through it. I mean, I don't have to be a preacher, because I'm as close to sort of hallelujah as I can get. Witnessing that, like getting to witness someone deciding to show up for life, even though it feels like dying sometimes.
Are you on the social medias or anything? How can people connect with you?
I'm on Instagram at @Ann_Heffron. I think that's it. I'm trying to get off social media, but it's so
that's
hard
what now. Everyone says,
right?
Including me.
Yeah. So I'm not even going to say about Facebook, because it's, but, and then my blog or my website is annheffron.com, and I write, I post about any upcoming events, and I blog my head off, and they're usually unedited and a mess, but I do them in about 45 minutes, and I try to talk about what I'm learning to help share with people. Thank you for asking those things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I am just so intrigued by your work, and I want to make sure everyone, at least within this when they were young realm, knows about you. And the question that I ask all of the guests, because we're about empowerment and bravery, is how are you, Anne, courageous in your life?
I'm courageous because there is a line of truth that goes through me that is the divine spirit, but that society doesn't want me to touch that, because that tells me I'm fine and that I am determined. I am determined to be that. So I just keep trying.
I love that.
Can you tell me yours?
Oh, okay. I'm courageous because last night was really hard for me. I did not sleep well. I think I took my vitamins late. And I woke up at 3 a.m. and I didn't really fall back to sleep until around 7. Woke up at 8:30. And I know that in order for me to have a more centered mental health state, I need to do certain things during the day. And I need to move. I need to nourish my body. I need to lean in and be present no matter what. And so despite the fact that I was grumpy as all get out when I woke up, I did not want to do any of the things that I had to do today. I went to yoga, made my morning tonic. I meditated and I prepared for this, and I've enjoyed this thoroughly. And to me, that's being courageous, showing up to the things that you set out to do and not backing down and not creating excuses, but just leaning in and being present no matter what.
That's what a lion does. You're a lion. You know, I want you to connect with Laura Barnard. Her company is Breakthrough Brands. It's Break, THRU. And I'm working on the Harvard book with her. She played basketball for the coach. And she in the last couple of years started a company with her wife, Breakthrough Brands. And it's all about empowering women to be leaders. And she's in Chicago. So I feel like you guys should, if you want, I'll write introductory email. I feel like you guys should go to lunch or something.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's on fire right now.
Oh, well, please then. Yeah. Please introduce me to people on fire. Another beautiful episode.
Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to my guest today. If you liked this episode, the best way to support me and this work is to write an iTunes review, a 5-star review. This helps us reach the top of searches and helps more people to find us. And if you personally want to connect, please reach out on Instagram or Facebook. And I have some great resource material on my website at laniceantoinecelli.com. So go on over there too. Until next we meet, go gently and have courage, my love.